Tonight is Wednesday night, March 1st, or fourth day of the month of Adar. This is the women's Mishnah Shir or Gemara Shir. We're learning Chulin. We're switching tonight to the eighth Perek, which incorporates most of the Sugyot. Should you decide one day to go for smicha, so you would be learning Yoredeya, like every guy learns Yoredeya. What? Of course, you learn Yoredeya, and Yoredeya, the Gemara upon which all of Yoredeya of Hilchos Basa B'Chalav and Hilchos Ta'aruvot, where you mix things up, all emerges from this perek and part of the previous perek. Ginanasha, which we will do as well. So, as advertised 2 weeks ago, we're going to switch from the first parak, which was primarily Shechita and topics of Chazaka and Rav, to real Basa B'Chalav issues.
Can you tell us the daf?
What?
The daf is
going to
come out of the copy.
Wait, in the Gemara part? Yeah, I'll tell you. It's Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Bet.
This is Perek Shvi'i?
No, that's Perek. That's the last daf version. On the bottom of the page, there's a Mishnah. That's the beginning of Perek Shmini. Kol HaBasar.
Okay.
That's Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Bet. Okay. But before we see the Mishnah itself, we will examine the sources in the Torah that discuss Basa B'Chalav. And there are three identical sources. No, it's okay. Yeah, positive. Thank you. There are three identical sources. One was read this past Shabbat, so you could not have forgotten it, where the unit in effect begins in Shmot Chaf Gimel. It begins with Pasuk Yudalid, where I bracketed. Shalosh regalim tachog li bashana. The Torah reminds us about three festivals. At Chagar Matzot Tishmor, Shivat Yamim Tochal Matzot Kasher Tziviti Chalamoet Chodesh Aviv, Kibo Yatzat Amim Mitzrayim. We should observe Pesach, eat Matzah, and Lo Yeira'u Fonai Reikam. When you show up in the Beit HaMikdash, don't come empty-handed, you must bring a korban. Then, there is Chag HaKatzir, the festival of the harvest, that's Shavuos, when fruits were harvested. Bikurei Ma'asecha, Asher Tizra Basadeh, V'Chag HaAsif, and then the harvest, the gathering, is B'Tzeit Hashana, at the end of the cycle of festivals, Ba'aspecha et ma'asecha min ha'sadeh. Shalosh pa'amim ba'shana yera'e kol zuchurcha et el p'nei ha'adon Hashem. Three times a year, show up in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lo tizbach al chametz dam zivchi. You are not permitted to slaughter the Korban Pesach if you are in possession of chametz, because the Korban Pesach is slaughtered 14th in the afternoon. And by that time, you're not allowed to own chametz any longer. V'lo yalin chelev chagi ad boker. And do not allow the fat of this korban, the korban Pesach, to last until the morning. Most korbanot have either one day, the day you slaughter it, and that night to eat it. So if I bring a sin offering, I was guilty of eating non-kosher chelev, non-kosher fat, b'shogeg. I thought, I didn't intend to do it, but I thought it was kosher, and it turned out to be not kosher. Under those circumstances, you have to bring a korban chatas. So the kohen will slaughter it, or you can slaughter it for that matter. We learned that in Chulin, that women are permitted to shecht even korbanot. And then, that day, after the Zrikat Hadam, after the sprinkling of the blood, anyone who is allowed to eat the korban can do so. So a korban chatat, you cannot eat. I can't eat. Only the family of Kohanim can eat a korban chatat the day it is slaughtered, plus the following night. If, however, if it's a korban shlamim, what we call kachim kalim, then you have 2 days and one night to eat it, and anybody who's tahor is allowed to eat it, as long as you're in Yerushalayim or HaKadosh. So if I bring a korban shlamim today, this afternoon, because you can't bring a korban at night, Beit HaMikdash is closed, so this afternoon I bring a korban, today I can eat it, tonight I can eat it, tomorrow I can eat it until sundown. Korban Pesach has unusual regulations. Korban Pesach may not be eaten the day it is slaughtered, because let's assume today would have been the 14th Erev Pesach. We slaughtered a Korban Pesach, but you're not allowed to eat it until it gets dark, until it, at night. Ve'achlu et habasar balayla hazeh. You have to wait until nighttime. Plus, by the time the next day arrives, it has to be completed. And you are not permitted to leave over any meat. And any meat that is left over has to be burnt. Not going into the details. Then, this unit concludes with the following statement. Reishit bikurei admatcha tavi beit Hashem elokecha. The first of your bikurim. Bikurim are first fruits. When an animal, when a tree produces its fruit, so the very first fruits, you're supposed to put a little red bendle on, which you buy when you're walking down from the pizza shop down to the Kotel. There's a guy selling red bendles. And you you put that around the tree, around the fruit, and you know that beginning the Yom Tov of Shavuot, that's when the season of Bikurim begins, and you're allowed to bring Bikurim, plus read the designated portion that accompanies Bikurim. It is chapter 26 of Sefer Dvarim, the beginning of Parshat Ki Tavo, Mikra Bikurim, where you say, Arami Yoyviravi, Vayerid Mitzrayima, happens to be in our Haggadah as well. So you bring it Beit Hashem Elokecha. You bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. Now I understand why that halacha is quoted in this unit. Why? Because the unit is Eschagam about Shalosh Regalim. So I quote two halachot, which are not really related to the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, but you have to know them. That you're only allowed to eat the Korban Pesach at night, can't lo yalin, plus the mitzvah of bringing Bikurim begins with the Yom Tov of Shavuos. And it ends with the Yom Tov of Sukkot in its complete form. Namely, if you bring fruits as Bikurim, which are given to the Kohen, before Sukkot, you read the Parsha as well. The Parsha called Mikra Bikurim. If you bring it after Pesach, after Sukkot, until Chanukah, you're obligated to bring the Bikurim, but you can't fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim any longer. So this is an important halacha. Reishit Bikurei Admatcha, the very first Bikurim, Tavi Beit Hashem Elokecha. You put it in a little basket, you bring it to Yerushalayim, amidst enormous fanfare. There's a lot of Maseches Bikurim as big tekes about bringing Bikurim. But then the unit ends, strangely enough, with something that has nothing to do with Beit HaMikdash. Lo tivashel gidi b'chalev imo. You are not permitted to cook a goat in its mother's milk. That's source number one. Source number one. Go to page number two. And you will see, this is 11 chapters later. It's the end of Parshat Ki Tisa. We'll read it in 3 weeks. And the Torah tells us, beginning where I bracketed Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Shalosh pe'amim bashana, yira'eh kol zuchurcha et pnei Hashem, et pnei ha'adon, Hashem Elokei Yisrael. 3 times I want you to make an appearance in the Beit HaMikdash. Fine. Skip a pasuk. Lo tishchat al chametz dam zivchi. Don't slaughter the Korban Pesach if you are in possession of chametz. Velo yalin laboker zevach chaga pasach. Do not leave over any of the meat of the Korban Pesach until the next morning. And then again, Reishit bikurei admatcha tavi beit Hashem Elokecha. Everything is fine and dandy. And once again, what sticks out like a sore thumb? Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imam. Okay, we'll comment in a minute. Page 3. Page 3 is Sefer Dvarim, Parshat Re'eh, chapter 14. The entire chapter deals with the laws of kashrut. Vos haste a kosher animal, and what's not a kosher animal? It is in effect a repeat of Leviticus, Vayikra chapter 11. As you well know, Sefer Dvarim basically is designed to review halachot that have been recorded in the previous Chumashim. That's why its nickname is Mishneh Torah, the review of the Torah. So the Torah spends an entire chapter telling us what is a kosher fish, what is kosher animal, and so on and so forth, what are kosher birds. At the very end, I bracketed it for you in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the Torah tells us, Lo tochlu kol nivela. Once I'm telling you what a kosher animal is, you have to be aware of the fact that in order to eat it, what must be done? Kosher shechita. Exactly. We spent 6 months on that. And if it dies anything through other than a kosher shechita, it's called nevela. Says the Torah, Lo tochlu kol nivela. What do you do with it? Lager asher bisharecha titnena va'achala. To the, literally, ger doesn't mean a Jewish convert, it means a ger toshav. A ger toshav is a Gentile who lives in Medinat Yisrael because the person promised loyalty and fidelity to Medinat Yisrael. He made the following pledge. I will observe Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and I'm going to pay my taxes like every other Israeli citizen. That's what a Ger Toshav is. If a Ger would like to live in Israel, he must become a Ger Toshav. If a Ger says, I plan on living and residing in Israel, but I'm going to worship Avodah Zarah, unfortunately he's not entitled to live, you kick him out of the land. If he's going to say, you know what, I have to steal, I have to kill, can't allow him to live. Why? They want an environment in Israel where nobody should have to worry that they left their bike outside overnight. Jews, at least in theory, are not going to engage in any theft. But this person also has to commit himself. I'm not going to kill anybody, so you don't have to worry about a terrorist attack. You don't have to worry about anything. Plus, no Avodah Zarah.
That's proper vetting.
Yes. Oh, yes. So, to such a person, you're allowed to give nevela. Titnena va'achala. You can give it to him and he can eat it. Oh, machur l'nachri. If you want to make a profit out of your nevela, you are permitted to do so, to sell it. Why? Kiyam kadosh ata l'Hashem Elokecha. You are a holy nation, and I don't allow you to eat nevela meat. You want to give it to a Gentile? Be my guest. And once again, in a somewhat awkward position, lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. So, first of all, three comments. The Torah never actually says you're not allowed to eat milk and meat that are cooked together. It doesn't say it. The Torah formulates the prohibition three times, lo tevasher. Now, there are many times in the Torah when a pasuk, a prohibition is repeated multiple times, and the Gemara can't figure out why, and the Gemara simply says, la'avor alav b'shalosh lavin, just to nail you three times for doing this. So, when we learned Psachim, there was an opinion of Rabbi Shimon who said that the pasuk, which is written three times, lo tochal alav chametz, don't eat chametz, all three of them apply to the Yontif of Pesach. And according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no lav against eating chametz on Erev Pesach. There is no lav of eating chametz she'avar alav Pesach. That if I had chametz and I didn't sell it, you're allowed to eat it according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would the Torah have to repeat three times the exact same lav? So he says, once is for Erev Pesach, once is for on Pesach, and once for post-Pesach. Good. But Rabbi Shimon says, it's all designed for one thing. To put three X's in your box, if you eat chametz upstairs, feed chametz on Pesach, upstairs on your box, there are now three X's, instead of just one X. Okay. Well, the Torah writes, lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. So you could have said that, why does the Torah write it three times? It's prohibiting only one activity, cooking basa b'chalav. That's it. However, why did the Torah write it three times? To nail you three times for the same activity. For the same activity. But the Gemara, as we will see it inside a little later, chooses to darshan each phrase, despite the fact that they are identically written, they're applied in three different circumstances. One, you are not permitted to eat meat and milk that have been cooked together. Two, you are not permitted to derive benefit from meat and milk that have been cooked together. And three, you are not allowed to cook milk and meat together. That's how the Gemara interprets it. So if you cook milk and meat together and don't eat it, you only violate one lav. Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev ima. If somebody else cooked basa b'chalev and you just ate it, you violate one lav of lo tevashel gedi b'chalev ima. If somebody else cooked it and you didn't eat it, but you sold it for commercial profit, you will violate the law of lo tevashel gedi b'chalev ima. So the Torah, the Gemara here feels, instead of saying la'avor olav b'shlosh olavim, to nail you three times for the same action, it is identified the nature of the Iser. The nature of the Iser is you're not allowed to cook them together. Once they are cooked together, you are not allowed to eat them. Plus, you will not be permitted to get hana'ah. In one of our subsequent shiurim, for those of you whose husbands are musmachim of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan a lot earlier than I was, you will ask them how the smicha b'china took place. It was done orally in front of three giants. Dr. Belkin, who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, got smicha from the Chavetz Chaim when he was 18 years old. The Rav and Rabbi Shatzkis. Rav Shatzkis was a senior Rav of YU, Rav Aaron Shatzkis, and you sat in front of these three people for 6 to 7 hours. You had to know all of your Yoredeya and two Masechtas that you could choose of your choosing. And they would fire questions at you for the next 6 hours. Many people knew nothing. They were intimidated, frightened, overwhelmed. So the Rav would say, come back in a couple of weeks, we'll try again. And sometimes they tried again and still wasn't terribly successful. Eventually they had mercy and compassion on you and they gave you smicha. Rav Shatzkis always, his first question every single time, was, what is the Rambam's chidush in his Perush HaMishnayis in Krisus about Basar B'Chalav? So there's an interesting Rambam. It's called the Strange Position of the Rambam. We're going to learn it inside. But it has to do with whether the Isur of eating and Hana'ah are essentially one, or is Hana'ah a separate prohibition? It's called the Nekuda Neflah, the puzzling statement of the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayis. Perush HaMishnayis. After a while, so many guys started getting terrified, they couldn't do this, so they switched to written Bechinot. That's what they did. The Rav and every Masechta gave two Bechinis a year. Whatever you learned from September to January, and whatever you learned from January to June, was on a Bechina. And in Yoredeya, Rabbi Weiss, Zechariah and Levracha, used to give five Bechinot. Five Bechinot a year, written Bechinot. But in those days, so we will remember, ask, if you're in a position to do so, Judy can do that. And
David had Rabbi Weiss.
Oh, he had Rabbi Weiss?
Yes. But,
but did he have an oral Bechino? Was it written?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? It was written already.
Okay.
What?
Moshe did Yardeo with the Rav.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, ask them if they ever sat in front of Rav Shatzkis for a smicha Bechino. Anyhow. Now, that's point number one. Now, the fact that the Torah uses this phrase lo tivashel for each one of the identical prohibitions teaches us an incredible point. That if the meat and the milk are not cooked together, you're allowed to eat them. You're allowed to have a roast beef sandwich and drink a milkshake with it and violate nothing according to Torah law. Zero. Why is that so? Because all three prohibitions the Torah formulates as lo tivashel. Of course there are derabbanans, lots of derabbanans, as we will learn. But on a d'oraita level, it's derech bishul asra Torah. Only if it's within the medium of cooking. So when you get questions that you were cooking some milk, some meat, and somebody dumped in some chocolate pudding in it, you have to know how hot it was, when was the last, and so there are lots of questions. But they're all spin-offs of the fact that it's derech bishul asra Torah. Yes?
Do you know why the Targum says, translates it as lo techul?
Yes. Because he wants you to know that it's not just an isa bishul. He wants to alert you to what the Gemara said, that if it is cooked, you're not allowed to eat it. He alerts you to that particular halacha. Because if he would just say, lo tivashelna, you come away with the impression there's no isa to eat it. Unless you know the Gemara.
But is that his job?
Yeah, that's one of his jobs, yeah. To interpret based on Torah Shebaal Peh. That is correct. Yes, that's one of Targum's his jobs. Yes. Then, as point number two that I want to make. The fact that the first two sources are remarkably similar begs itself. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parshat Mishpatim share the exact same terminology and sequence of mitzvot in Parshat Ki Tisa? Why? You know, normally it's not a pattern that is found too frequently in the Torah. And the answer, there are many answers to that. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein suggested the following answer. There was an enormous episode that took place between Mishpatim and this event described in Kitisa. And that is Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel. And he used the following imagery. You have a young man and a young woman who are engaged to one another and get married, and now they're going to build their home together. Just like Am Yisrael, we're going to build their home, the home of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's deals with this week's parshiot, Truma, Tetzava, the building of the Mishkan. And then one of them is unfaithful to the other. Unfaithful. But they decide to make up. Make up. There were no witnesses, so nobody's getting killed. And that's it. Okay. Do you think the same enthusiasm that the wife was having when she went to that store on Route 4 about window shades? What's the name of that? What? Blinds to go. Blinds to go. Do you think she's going to go into that store, blinds to go, with the same cheshek as if it before it was before the thing? No. You think the husband is going to start looking whether he's going to get Verizon or Optimum so that he can have ESPN all the time with the same cheshek that he had before? Had a, no, it's not going to happen. What?
That he had before
the affair. So they were looking, they were ready to build a house and decorate God's house, the symbol of the marriage between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then suddenly they went ahead and were disloyal. They worshipped the Egel. So human beings are not capable of resuming the same emotional intensity after such a breach of a relationship. It's impossible for them to restore that type of relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not you and me. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to forgive you, I'm going to show you how I'm going to forgive you. Not only am I just going to mouth the words and say, you know what, you're forgiven, Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't have to wipe you out of my book, even though you threatened me, I'm not going to build a new nation through you, I'm going to let Am Yisrael. But when I say I forgive, I have the capacity to engage with you in the exact same fashion even as it was before the ego. So how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicate that? He picks up exactly where he left off before the Chet HaEgel. Parshas Mishpatim is the last parsha before Truma, which is the building of the Mishkan. So what was he talking about before the Chet HaEgel? What was he talking about? Chag HaMatzot Tishmor, observe Shalosh Regalim, bring Bikurim, don't sacrifice a Korban Pesach when there is Chametz, don't leave it over. And Lo Tevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo. Therefore, as a symbol that HaKadosh Baruch Hu means it when he says, I will forgive, and reestablish that tie in chapter 34 in Parshas Kisisa, it's the exact same language once again. Once again. It's as if nothing happened. We resume the exact same text and dialogue as if nothing happened. That is only something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can get. Point number three. Why is Basa B'Chalav listed in this unit? Why is it listed here in this unit? So the answer can perhaps be understood if you adopt Shitas HaRambam. Most people will tell you that Basa B'Chalav is a chok. There doesn't seem to be a lot of compelling logic why you should not cook milk and meat together. The Velt tells us that when you cook cream and milk with meat, It really has an enriched flavor. And that's what we're supposed to say. I'd love to taste it. But the Rabbi Nishol Alam said no. But we would love to taste that. Okay? But the Rambam doesn't believe that it's a chok. The Rambam believes it's a manifestation of Avodah Zarah. That part of pagan culture was that as an offering to the god for having blessed your animal with a child, you take that child, it was usually the first, and cooked it in its mother's milk. That's what the Rambam claims. Both in Mishneh Torah, as well as in Moreh Nevuchim. It's a form of Avodah Zarah. Now Rambam uses this 50 times to explain bizarre prohibitions of the Torah. Why am I not permitted to cut my peyot? Why can't you cut your peyos? So everybody says, there is no reason. It's a chok. Torah never explained the logic. So the Rambam writes that the priests of pagan churches would take a bowl, put it on top of their head, and then take the razor and cut it this way. So it's a pagan practice. Therefore, you're not allowed to do it.
Well, the movies have them like that.
What?
The movies have them.
Okay, so it's a pagan practice. If you should assume that the Rambam is correct, we can understand a potential interjection of Avodah Zarah in this particular unit. We can understand it. What is the thrust of this unit? The thrust of this unit is Aliyah L'Regel. Now, if you study ancient culture and study what takes place in the Beit HaMikdash, you will find remarkable resemblance between what we do and what they do. They have animal sacrifice. We have animal sacrifice. They have ketoret, incense. They have that. We have that too. We have priests. They have priests. So what's the difference between our mode of worship and their mode of worship? The answer is, there is no difference whatsoever. There is only one difference. Asher lo tzivah Hashem. That's it. This God legislated, and this he said, I don't want to see it. Okay? So when a Jew comes to the Beit HaMikdash 3 times a year, and he comes from Tel Aviv, and he lived right next door to a pagan church. And he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he says, Bein Yishalayim. It's the exact same thing that I saw next door. What do I got to schlep to Yishalayim for? I'll go next door and do the same thing. So the Torah wants to deliberately insert a mode of pagan ritual in the parsha that deals with what? That deals with Aliyah L'Mikdash. Aliyah L'Mikdash. In fact, Abarbanel, in his introduction to Sefer Vayikra, makes an incredibly significant point. Usually, Parshanim try to understand significance of detail of mitzvot. Significance of detail. So you will look at this week's parsha. The Aron is Amah v'chetzi Orko, v'Amah v'chetzi Rochbo, v'Amah v'Masayim Masayim Komato. The Aron is an Amah wide, an Amah long, and 2 Amot high. How come? So Parshanim will make an effort to try to understand it. Asks Abarbanel. We're going to study Sefer Vayikra. And every single korban has its own little detail. This korban, there is a little circle in the middle of Mizbeach, it's called the Chut HaSikra. Some korbanot, you sprinkle the blood on top of that little line. Some korbanot, you sprinkle it below. Some korbanot you have to have shtei matanot shehein arba. So you sprinkle on the corners, the two opposite corners. Now when the blood goes from the corner, it now goes onto all four sides. That shtei matanot shehein arba. Sometimes there's only one sprinkling, matana achas, and that's it. He asked the Barbanel, is there any logic to any of this? Any logic? Why is this korban eaten for 2 days and one night, and this one only eaten for 1 day and one night? Why is it that korban ola can't be eaten at all? Nothing. It has to be completely burnt. Why? Says Abarbanel, don't waste your time. There is nothing to it. It's all arbitrary. Why is it arbitrary? All HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do is differentiate between what you see in your local pagan temple and what's doing in the Beit HaMikdash. And that's it. And that's it. And that's why when we read Parshat Shmini, the Shabbos right after Pesach usually, and we inquire as to why Nadav and Avihu died in a blaze of fire, the answer is, I don't need any Rashi Medrash that they hayru halacha bifnei Moshe Rabban, they paskin the halacha in the presence of Moshe, or nichnesu shetu yayin, they walked and they were intoxicated. The pasuk says, v'hakrivam eish zara asher lo tziva Hashem. That's it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say to do it. If he didn't say to do it, it's avodah zara. It's avodah zara. And hence, if you adopt the Rambam's position, we understand the cautioning of not cooking an animal in its mother's milk in the parsha of Shalosh Pamim Mishana Yirakos Zuchurcha. Because the overlap between Mikdash and pagan was remarkable. It was very difficult to see the difference. So as the Torah commands us to ascend to the Mikdash 3 times a year, I'm telling you, buddy, don't get any ideas that you're going to emulate and bring this to your local chapter, to your local shtiebel. Because if you bring it into the shtiebel, it's avodah zara. It's avodah zara. And that's nothing short of that. So, the reason why it's primarily brought here is for this particular reason. It doesn't explain why it's in Re'eh. Does not explain why it's in Re'eh. But at least it does explain why it's in Mishpatim and in Kitisa, the first 2 times that the Torah presents it. Okay, let's move on. Let's go now to page number 4 and see the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Kol habasar asur levashel bechalav. All meat cannot be cooked in milk. Chutz, however, mibsar dagim, you're allowed to cook fish and milk. You're allowed to cook fish and milk. V'chagavim, grasshoppers. Now, grasshoppers used to be eaten all the time. All the time. Chocolate-covered grasshoppers was considered a delicacy. That is correct.
Milk chocolate, yes.
So now the Mishnah posits that although they may have called the meat of fish meat, they may have called the flesh meat, it's not included in the prohibition, neither is chagavim. The Gemara will spend several blot, and we're going to try to get to the Mishnah tonight. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is, and Rabbi Akiva, that chicken is not called meat either. And that middaoraita, you are allowed to cook chicken in milk. Chicken in milk, you're allowed to cook chicken in milk.
In what
pot? It's parv. The chicken is parv. So you can cook chicken in a milchik pot. Yeah, it's parv. It's what it is. It's parv. We'll see what happens. There's a Mishnah, three opinions about it. We'll see what happens. Yeah. Now, you should know that on a d'oraita level, and this is critical, in order for something to be called cooked, it requires the medium of heat. However, midrabanan, it does not. So there is a halakha, we will learn it inside, called kavush kimavushal. If you have a pot of meat in your refrigerator, and you had on the second drawer, and you had on top, you had a bottle of milk, and there was a leak in the bottle of milk, and the water and the milk just leaked into the pot in the refrigerator. If it soaks in that pot for 24 hours, the halacha considers it as if it's been cooked, and you're not allowed to eat it on a derabbanan level. But here, when we will talk about unless otherwise noted, it requires the medium of heat. And then chidush number two is that bishul does not mean the temperature in which something is boiled. It doesn't require 212 degrees. It requires what the Mishnah discusses in Masechet Shabbos, yad soled esbo. It's hot enough that if I were to stick my finger in, I would have to withdraw it. So your homework for tonight, for tomorrow, next week, is to try and identify what temperature that happens to be. And if you burn your finger, too bad. Rabbi Tendler did that, and he said it is 117 degrees. And most poskim operate with that notion that yad soled esbo is 117 degrees. So if the milk is 117 degrees and you put meat in it, you violate the Isur of Bishul Midda'oraita. And the same thing is true for Hilcha Shabbos. If you put something on a flame and it's less than 117 degrees, you do not violate the biblical prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. But if it's 117 degrees, it's Asur Midda'oraita. Asur Midda'oraita by Hilcha Shabbos, by Basa B'Chalav, and wherever cooking is a requirement. So, now, the Mishnah also immediately, and it's a little difficult to understand why, introduces a derabbanan when you have Basa B'Chalav as well. A derabbanan. What does the Mishnah say? Asur Laha'alot Im Hagvina Al Hashulchan. If you have cheese on a table, you are not permitted to put on that table a piece of meat. Not permitted. Now, why not? Why can't you put a piece of meat on the table with cheese? So here is going to emerge an incredibly fundamental principle. There is a rule called Ein Gozrin Gzeira Ligzeira that we know of many rabbinic decrees, but we never make one rabbinic decree to protect another rabbinic decree. We never do that. That's a famous rule. Ein Gozrin Gzeira Ligzeira. So now let's analyze what's happening in this line of the Mishnah. Obviously, I didn't cook anything together. I have a piece of cheese, and now I have my roast beef. Remember Mr. Weber in the cafeteria? More roast beef, please, Mr. Weber. Guy came from. I used to go with him from Borough Park to YU every day. So he worked in the cafeteria.
No, but
Parker was the owner. He was the manager of the kitchen. But Mr. Weber stood behind the counter and asked, do you want more roast beef?
Presley gave you roast beef.
What?
Presley gave you roast beef.
Oh, yes. You used to get the best deals on a meal in the YU calf. For $3-4, you could have a very decent meal. $5, you can have a veal chop. $5, not anymore. But at that time, Mr. Parker was very understood. He cared, and he cared about the kids that they shouldn't have to pay too much. He was a very fine person. So here is Gzeira number one. Tell me, ladies, why you are not permitted to have a milkshake and a roast beef sandwich at the same time. Tell me why you can't.
They're afraid you'll forget that you're cooking.
Correct. They're afraid that one day, if you're going to eat meat and milk that is not cooked together, you'll say, what difference does it make? Next time I'm going to take my roast beef and cook it in milk. So that's Gzeira number one. Gzeira number one. So you're not allowed to eat milk and meat together despite the fact that they haven't been cooked. Now, which Gzeira is our Mishnah recording? The Mishnah didn't say you can't eat cheese together with roast beef.
Can't
put it on the same table.
Which would be a rabbinic thing on rabbinic thing.
Ah, so now what's happening? Why can't I put a piece of cheese on a table where there is meat? Because we're afraid I'm going to eat it. And then I'm going to be afraid that what? So many will raise the question, this is a violation of the principle of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. You can't legislate a decree to protect a decree. You can legislate a decree to protect a d'oraita that we have thousands of. So what's happening here? So I want to share with you a yesoid posited by Rab Kiveger. Rab Kiveger posited this rule and he quoted it in Maseches Beitza Gimel Amud Aleph. Judy, you remember we learned Beitza. And we did Beitza. A long time ago. Spent a lot of time on it. And I used to give it between Mincha Marv. I spent 12 years on Maseches Beitza. 12 years. So we covered two lines a week. It's a spectacular Masechta. Spectacular. But the opening Mishnah tells us, Beitza shenolad b'yom tov, Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to eat it. An egg that is laid on Yom Tov, Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to eat it. Ask the Gemara, why not? There are four answers. The third one is offered by Rabbi Yosef, and he says, I'm going to literally say, you're not allowed to eat an egg that was laid on Yom Tov because of Peirot Hanoshrin, because of an apple that falls off a tree. That's why you're not eating an egg that's laid on Yom Tov. Ask the Gemara, what are you ripped? What's one got to do with the other? Says the Gemara, an apple that falls off a tree by itself, I know why you're not allowed to eat it. Even though you violated nothing. I didn't pluck it. It fell off the tree. But if it's going to be a geschmecke apple, something, next time it says, oh, I'm going to pluck the next one. So I understand the nature of the rabbinic prohibition. That's one gzeira. But now, says the Gemara, if I eat an egg that was laid on Yom Tov, I didn't do anything, Miss Chicken did the whole thing herself, I'm going to eat an apple that fell off a tree too. And then if I eat an apple that fell off a tree, next thing I'm going to pluck it. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? It's a gzeira l'gzeira. I am not allowed to eat an egg that is laid because I might eat an apple that fell off the tree. Why would I make a rabbinic decree to protect the rabbinic decree? So the Gemara answers, Kula chada gzeirahi. It's all one gzeirah. Says Rab Kiveger, listen carefully. If the Chachamim have a concern in their mind, if they have a concern, and they're worried that Jews are going to violate potentially this biblical prohibition, they have a right to make 50 gzeirot in order to ultimately what? Protect the biblical prohibition. Now they saw a link between a chicken laying an egg and an apple falling off a tree.
Wasn't a status thing?
No. Just one second. How did they see a connection? Because when the chicken lays the egg was part of the chicken. And now it came out. Well, so too. An apple hanging on a tree was part of the tree. Now it fell off the floor. It's no longer part of the tree. So as long as the Chazal see a connection between A and B, they can do A, B, C, D, E, F, as many as they want, in order to protect us from plucking an apple off a tree. Says Reb Kiveger, where does the rule of Ein Gzozer and Gzera L'Gzera apply? It's quoted all over the Gemara. If they have this liberty, they should be able to make 20,000 Gzerot. Who can? Says Reb Kiveger, I'll give you the case. Where Gzera A is because of one concern, Gzeira B is because of another concern, and they happen to intersect. And I'm going to give you the case. Then the Chachamim have no right. I'll give you the case. Okay? Ladies, are you allowed to carry a child in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on Shabbos? A child who was born 2 days ago. Are you allowed to call? Absolutely not. Michal Shabbos Midoraisa. Why? Because the kid can't walk by himself. He can't. So his getting from point A to point B was a result of you. It's Asa Midoraisa. Good. Are you allowed to carry a child in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim who can walk?
Yes.
According to Torah law, yes. The principle is Chai No se et atzmo. A living creature can walk by itself. It doesn't need you to get from point A to point B. But we all know kids are stubborn mules. And sometimes they don't want to walk. And it's already an hour after davening, it's 2 hours after that, and you're still on the corner of West Englewood Avenue in Sussex. So what do? You pick the stupid kid up, and that's it. And violate an Issa D'Rabbanan. Why are you not allowed to carry a child who can walk by himself or herself? Why are you not allowed to? Because you might carry a baby. So that's Gzeira number one. You're not allowed to carry a child who can walk in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim because we're afraid you're going to carry a child who can't walk in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. That's scenario number one. Now comes scenario number two. Are you allowed to carry a child who cannot walk in a Carmelis? In a Carmelis. A Carmelis is, just for sake of convenience, it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but it's not a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. It's not a public thing. Like every street in Teaneck, New Jersey. In order to be a Rashut HaRabim, we thank the Rabbeinu Shalom, Paskin like Rashi, that you need 600,000 people trespassing on that street every single day of the week. Otherwise, the street is called a Carmelis. So West Englewood Avenue is a Carmelis, even though it has other criteria which would make it into Rashut HaRabim. It's more than 16 amot wide, it's 24 feet wide, and it's mefulash. It goes from one end of town to the other end of town pretty much in a straight line. So why can't I carry? because I'm afraid if I'm going to allow you to carry in a you're going to carry in Rosh Hashanah. You're going to carry in Rosh Hashanah. Fine. So now I'm going to intersect the two cases. Can I carry a child who can walk in a Carmelis? Can I carry a child who can walk in a Carmelis?
No.
So in order to prohibit it, what do I need? I need two gzeirot to operate. You can't carry the child in the Carmelis because I might carry a baby in a Rosh Hashanah. I can't carry anybody in a Carmelis because I might wind up carrying in Rosh Hashanah. So here, it's the child who's in a walking child intersecting in an area which according to Torah law there's no prohibition to carry at all because it's a Carmelis. There, says Rabbi Kiviger, that's where we apply Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. So if somebody asks, now many Achronim didn't like what Rabbi Kiviger said, but trust me, his shoulders are so broad that if you have one of your children or grandchildren being in action and he doesn't want to walk in Teaneck, just pick him up. Because in order to violate anything, there are two separate independent gzeirot that have to be applied at this time. Number one, he's a kid who can walk. Well, I can't carry him because I might carry a kid who can't walk. Number two, I can't carry him in a Carmelis because I might carry him Rosh Hashanah. Well, this is not a Rosh Hashanah, and this kid can walk. So Rabbi Kiviger says, go ahead and carry him. Why? Because that's the principle of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. There were two separate gzeirot which happened to coincide. But in our case, in our Mishnah, what is the one thing that the Chachamim want us to avoid? The one thing that they want us to avoid. What is the one thing they want us to avoid? Don't cook milk and meat. I don't care if I have to have 50 gzeirot to protect you not to cook milk and meat. So the first thing I say is, don't have a roast beef sandwich with a milkshake. Okay. Then I say, even if I'm not going to eat my milkshake and the roast beef, don't even put them on the table. That's what the Mishnah is saying. It's a double gzeira, and it's designed to protect you ultimately from the one da'oraisa. It's two steps away, but it's from the one da'oraisa, namely that you're not allowed to eat meat and milk that have been cooked together. So that principle is being communicated to us in this Mishnah. Asur leha'alot im hagvina al hashulchan chutz nibasar dagim v'chagavim. You can put cheese with fish on the table. Interesting to note, as you well know, Sephardic Jews do not eat meat and they do not eat fish and dairy together. Don't. They don't. They never had cream cheese and lox. They don't know what they're missing. They don't. And it's the same. Principle. There's a word that I'm looking. You know, where it's just no logic to it. It's just superstition. It's the same superstition that we have. Why you're not allowed to eat meat and fish together. There's no logic to it. It's a superstition. But we, Am Yisrael, are very superstitious people, and it's made its way into the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber quotes that. And the Shach says, oh, but the Sfarim don't eat cheese and fish. And we don't eat. It's back in Shulchan Aruch. But we know it's a superstition. And in fact, there was once a very famous episode, Nechama, you might remember this from your Muncie days, which were light years ago. Light years. So Rab Moshe, Zichrona Levracha, used to come to Rabbi Tendler very frequently for the Yontav of Sukkos. So it was Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and a woman made a cholent and took out of the freezer a roll which she thought was kishka. It turned out to be gefilte fish. Gefilte fish. Okay? So they knew Rav Moshe was in town, so they came over to the sukkah and they asked Rav Moshe the kasha. How many people think Rav Moshe said you're not allowed to eat it? What would we say? What do you mean? It's meat and fish cooking together. Mm-hmm. Not just with the same fork, it's cooking together. Right. Said Rav Moshe, go ahead and eat it. Right. Why? The whole thing is a superstition. So when do we observe the superstition? When it's be'en, the real item. A real piece of fish together with what? A real piece of meat. Here, I didn't take the fish and mix it up into the chalt. It was in the thing. So what do I have to worry about? Ta'am. And we're going to spend months on the principles of ta'am, where the item itself is not mixed together, but the taste might be transferred. Says Rav Moshe, we don't transfer superstitions on ta'am. We observe the superstition on the item itself, but not the ta'am. And therefore he told the person, you can eat it. Take it out and eat both of them. Yes, that's correct. That's correct. So our Mishnah, then let's just go to the next page for a minute. Just go to the next page for 1 minute. The Mishnah concludes, Hanoder min habasar mutar bibsar dagim v'chagavim. Here is a third principle that the Mishnah communicates. If I take a vow, I am prohibiting all meat upon myself like a korban. So just like I can't just go ahead and eat a korban, I'm not allowed to eat this meat. That's a neder. But by nidarim, the halacha is haloch achar lishon b'nei adam. Don't follow what the halacha says. Follow the way people discuss something. So, if you said, I'm going to serve meat tonight, would anybody ever expect that you're getting fish? Oh no, not me. Not anybody here. If you're expecting meat, you don't get fish. Because people don't call meat fish. And certainly you're not expecting grasshoppers. Not expecting grasshoppers. And here comes the critical difference. I told you, and we'll read the Mishnah next time, that chicken is not included in meat according to the Torah. Not included in meat. You're allowed to cook chicken and milk midoraisa together and eat them. What would you say about somebody who took a neder, I'm not eating any meat? Is he allowed to eat chicken or not?
Midoraisa, yes.
If I just gave you the principle. When we expect a meat meal, do you often get chicken? Of course you do. So for a neder purpose, even though, listen carefully, chicken is not meat for basa b'chalav purposes, but chicken is meat because people call chicken at a meat, it's expected at a meat meal. Therefore, mid-de-oraita, once you take a neder not to eat meat, you're not allowed to eat chicken either. And that's why the Mishnah only quotes fish and chagavim. But as we will learn in the next Mishnah, which is 11 blot away, Daf Yud Gimel, but I want to show that Mishnah, chicken is a very unusual animal. It's technically, halachically, not compared to a gedi. Because the Torah always emphasizes lo tivashel gedi b'chalev imo, and there are two factors that a gedi possesses that a chicken does not. But when it comes to a neder, where the halacha says haloch achar lashon b'nei adam, just see the way people refer to that particular word. chicken is always identified as meat. You don't get chicken in a pizza shop. You get chicken in a meat store. You go into the butcher, into a fleishik restaurant, they serve chicken, and that's expected. So that's what the Mishnah says here. So we'll stop here, continue next of off. This is just plenty here, getting involved in understanding. And when we're finished with this, in about 8 years, you will be able to paskin every single kitchen mechanics question. Every single one of them.
Our son David,
who
was Hashanah
Rebbe. Oh, wow.
And Rebbe brought the brothers to our house, and we still have a whole thing that
Avram
wrote.
Really?
That Rebbe was a Sunday.
Wow.
Very special.
I'm sure it was.
Rebbe Yehuda, the comparison of the apple going to the tree.